Hey, Brandon.
Hello, Alan.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Okay. Well,
happy
to
be podcasting.
Yeah, me too. It's been a week.
Not like last week when it had only been a few days.
It was like 3 days or something like
that. I've actually had time to build up anticipation of the fun that we will have.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope, I know people have been excited to listen and check it out because today we have a guest.
Woohoo!
Yay! Say hi, guest!
Hello, everyone.
Alan, give the guest a name.
His name is Kevin, and he comes from...
Hello.
Sorry, I went game show. I went game show announcer. Sorry. Hey, Kevin.
Hey,
how
Alan. Good, my friend. Good. So you're gonna out me on this podcast?
Yes, yes. This is my friend Kevin Ong.
I'll go with the first one was good.
We're gonna go. Should I like really work on it, or is it
like
we can fix that in post?
Yeah.
Yeah. The umlaut goes over the A.
Umlaut? Can you put umlauts over A's? Kevin Ong, everybody.
Yes, we're calling it a thing.
Kevin Ong, everybody. He's a good friend of the podcast for quite a while and a personal friend of mine. That's kind of how we got him on the show.
good get.
And from, cash money. Hard cash.
Yeah, it's actually, we don't have any cash.
I didn't get paid. What the hell?
Hey, no cash for me, no cash for nobody, all right?
No cash.
Darn tootin'.
But Kevin and I have been friends, I realize, a long time.
Yeah, I was actually trying to do the math in my head, but I'm barely functional.
No,
that'll just make Alan feel bad.
It would.
Do the math.
Yeah. Age math, year math, time math, you don't want to do that around me.
It's year really math. Bad. Yeah. No, it's been a millennia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while. So we'll just skip over that part and quickly. What have you been doing, Kevin? You want to introduce yourself? Do you have anything to go with? What is your thing right now?
What is my thing? I have been a artist my whole career, and in various incarnations. It's been a windy journey, to say the least. I mean, I've been everything from broadcast designer to a feature film animator to a graphic designer. You name it, I've sort of touched some part of some industry. So, but I'm also now delving into picture books and storytelling. The thing I've always wanted to do in my career is really to just become a better storyteller. And that's a really nebulous position. There's no real like, hey, senior storyteller, or there's no such thing. So it's really, it's a very wide, vast tundra that I'm actively exploring right now. And it's taking the form of a story inspired by pieces that I've done in the past few years, a few personal, I guess you could say paintings. And which, Alan, which you were at that solo exhibition last year.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it in a nutshell. But I'm actively working on this book. I'm going to conferences. The publishing industry is a whole different kit and caboodle. They're a lot nicer. I don't know how else to put it.
than you expected, or nicer than other industries?
There, I mean, and it's also, right now I'm focusing generally in the children's industry, and it's they're just more generous of spirit, generous with time. I mean, I have a few peers and friends who are either published or unpublished, and it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they just all want to share. They all really care about, I mean, it's going to sound very sappy, but they just care about the kids. They care about the fact that, I mean, if you think back to your childhood in terms of, I don't know, for Alan Brendan, what your favorite books were growing up, your favorite picture books or young adult books, but those things stay with you your whole lifetime.
Oh yeah,
one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish is my jam. So,
I was a monster at the end of this book guy.
Oh,
Mess me that, up, man.
That I don't know.
Oh, a little while.
Yeah, I don't
so
know
it's,
that one either.
It's Grover. Grover Monster from Sesame Street.
Uh-huh.
And the title of the book is, there's a monster at the end of this book. And so you turn the first page and Grover is like, what did that title say? There's a monster? And then you turn the page and he's like, no, don't yes. do that. That means we're getting closer to the monster.
Okay, is it bad that I saw the iPad version of that?
No, that's
weird
fine.
Animation.
Was it a little golden iPad? Did it have a little gold leaf side of it, at least to kind of retain that little bit of my childhood on it?
Oh no, I don't think so. But it was fully, you know, somewhat fully animated. And it's like, oh, this is pretty adorable. So I'm trying to imagine it as a still, like a real, you know, that your parents are reading it to you, or so that actually that did. It did scare you as a child?
Oh, no, 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 no. So
you loved...
It's Sesame Street. I mean, the level right. of scare is more because, you know, spoiler alert, Grover is kind of neurotic. So
right.
So it's playing on his neuroses and, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's funny to analyze a kid's book in this way, but it really just like kind of nurtures a sense of Schadenfreude. For Grover, it's like, oh, you feel bad that he thinks that he's scared for this monster, but you want to keep turning the page, and it's kind of funny how like just crazy he gets. He's putting up walls and
that's right,
tying the pages together, and yeah, wow, I did not expect to talk about this today.
That was a deep cut.
But
and how did that make you feel, Adam?
Yeah, exactly. What kind of you know? We'll talk about mental disorders and Sesame Street. Yeah. Why not?
I'm sure my you know there's some relationship with my mother that has to be explored further. but let's not make this about me now, guys. So when you say you're working on a storytelling project, are you looking for something that are you trying to create something that's a story in a like in a physical book or something that would be more digital? Because I know you've done kind of both in your right. career.
Right. No, that's a great question. And I'm actually approaching it from several angles, just because, as I told you earlier, I think that windy path has really sort of informed the way I attack things creatively. And I love movies on top of it. I mean, movies are what have fueled my creativity since I was a child. And in some ways, it even probably motivated me to start drawing to begin with. I mean, I can even remember as early as, like, two, after watching, I think it's called Orca with Richard Harris, and coming home to draw like
the Jaws ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Nice one, Brendan. And I had one of those magnetic drawing pads at home, and I just came home and just started drawing this like this elephant with giant eyeballs and no blowhole, by the way. But it's one of those. It's just one of those things. It just that it had that specific impact on me. Storytelling was just, you know, the whatever film I was watching when I was growing up, whether or not it was E.T. or Star Wars or Tron, you know, and I would come home and just draw reams and reams of things inspired, the things that would just light up, you know, that neuron feel in my brain. And so in the way that sort of surfaces now with this story, I'm actually treating it as both a physical book. I'm also treating it as a possible short film, and also as probably in between those two, an app, some sort of interactive app. But even the book itself is sort of a different concept. So I took two pieces from the show I had last year, one of which, both had sort of an emotional impact on people. And I thought, well, if I had the opportunity to sort of conjoin those two characters together and really give them some life, I would rise to that challenge somehow. And so that came in the form of a children's illustrators and writers conference also last year. And so I started storyboarding everything out, and all those thoughts and little stories that have been percolating in my mind just started spearheading into this skeleton of a story. And I came up, so it's hard, this isn't podcast friendly, but I actually have a sort of a dummy of how that looks. I have finished pieces of this story in this Shutterfly printed book, and you can read it from both sides. So basically one of the stories is read from sort of the Western, the quote unquote, the Western way, left to right. And the other side is read, you know, Eastern, right to left. And they're both individual stories, can be read either way. You don't have to read them, you know, sequentially, but they meet physically and literally in the middle of the book. Does that kind of make sense?
Oh yeah, that sounds cool.
Thank you. And I've been calling it, you know, the Sleepless in Seattle of, you know, if I ever have to like elevator pitch it, I probably will make a publisher go, well, you know, fuck off, because we're not making
as
this.
As long as it's not the
Seattle.
You've Got Mail of children's.
Exactly. Meg Ryan is in this book?
Full frontal.
Yeah, oh no. Oh no.
So as long as it's an audiobook and we get the restaurant scene, I think someone's going to be happy.
Exactly. But it kind of paints a picture of the fact that, like, in Sleepless in Seattle, these characters don't meet until the very end. And in my story, that's also very true.
Spoilers.
Total spoilers, man. Well, I can tell you. Okay, so briefly, the log line for the story is it's about this boy and a girl, opposite sides of the world. Well, not so much opposite. One's in Bali and one is in Africa. And they've both suffered a tremendous loss. One has lost a friend in a tsunami, and the other one has lost his family in a village raid. And so it's a total laugh riot.
Awesome. I'm trying really hard not to laugh right now.
Yeah, stifle it. And they find a way to each other. So basically music actually saves them. Music and these animal spirits that take shape, that they're able to manifest on each side. So they both have different animals. For the boy, it's an elephant. And for the girl, it's a type of bird. I'm not sure what type of bird that is yet. And if you look at my I have a Facebook fan page right now, and I'm actually starting to illustrate different types of birds, and perhaps people can start voting on what they think would be appropriate.
I would vote not penguins.
Not penguins. Not tuxedos. I'm gonna go. Yes.
Don't please. Just for me, man. Please don't go with a penguin.
Wow.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Because as I've stated on the podcast before, penguins are bullshit.
Just as a thing.
As a thing, yes, in general.
There must be a shirt for that out there somewhere. Penguins are bullshit.
when we open the Not a Thing store.
Exactly. So, yeah, and you're catching me on this day where I just filmed sort of a shorter version of what I just talked about, and I cannot tell you, can I just give you, I'm not used to filming myself, and I'm not used to talking on any sort of media. So I think I did over like 40 or 50 takes of me selling my soul. Well,
not your soul, just yourself.
Just myself.
Just think of it as a rental of your soul. You're not selling it.
Exactly. And you guys know, I mean, Brandon, I don't know about you, but I know in Alan's case, you must know, I mean, when you do voiceovers or just any sort of, like, thing.
Aha! Mame, me, mo, moo. Boneless, skinless chicken breast. Boneless, skinless chicken breast. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
So, Brandon, Kevin and I took independently a voiceover instruction class.
Mm-hmm.
During which, you know, props to voice media. I can't remember her name. Susan. I don't know her last name. I'm sure I have an email that I've gotten in the last like 5 minutes from
Let's
her.
Just say Smith.
But sure. But yeah. So we both went through this voiceover class. So there's some
exactly.
weird inside jokes that might have come from that. But boneless, skinless chicken breasts. That's the short form. I can tell you the long form offline, maybe. But
you don't go with the human torch was denied a bank loan.
That one I didn't learn.
Anchorman style.
I love New York. Oh, that's right. I need New York. I need unique New York. That's the line. Yeah, that's the wrongest thing ever. But anyway.
Everybody at home, try that.
Yeah. So the short form was, I mean, but you were talking about seeing yourself too. So you were doing video, not just voiceover.
Yeah. So like, you know, a flip video cam and.
Hey, I take offense to that term, being Filipino American.
You know, listen, it's all in good fun. I'm Asian too, from Southeast Asia.
I'm not. Okay. I'm stepping back from this conversation.
We're very sensitive.
Quietly.
Yeah, that race card is like all like in the hand, like just about to touch the felt. You know, it's like exactly. On the way. It's like midair, any second. Or kind of a hair trigger for that kind of thing. But anyway,
hey, it's probably why they went out of business, right?
Hair trigger is offensive to bald people, Alan. How dare you?
Oh, boy.
No, they went out of business because Cisco bought them and then used their cameras for their web voice over IP plus camera, like IP telephony thing, and then closed the company for consumer products.
Well, I never.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, flip video, you were saying?
Yes.
Filipino-American video, Alan.
Exactly. The only brand I ever use. And it turned out fine in the end. I'm not totally happy with the results, but it's just one of those things where you just, the creator is not used to being in front of anything. I just think that's oftentimes true. I do, you know, and this might segue quite well to the Oscars, because I can't imagine really doing that job and being comfortable in it. I mean, we're talking about acting now, just really being in that space.
Hey, Brandon, we should keep this guy around. His segue stuff is like sweet.
I try.
I'm sorry. Hey, Kevin, if you want to stay on, Alan is totally disposable. If you want to stage some sort of podcast coup, I am down.
And I'm Asian, so I fulfill some sort of quotient. You know?
Yeah. If I'm in a podcast, it has to be with an Asian. That's just a personal rule of mine.
It's a nice Twinkie combination.
Wow, not a thing, everybody. Not a thing.
Not a Asians?
Thing. Jeez, you're just going all racist today, Alan. Asians are a wonderful people.
Keep going. Wow.
So
I don't even there's know a where... line. I have found it. I will stop there.
Wow, excellent.
I'm
so
smart.
So Oscars. I actually did not watch the Oscars this season.
Un-American.
Yeah, pretty much. I was watching The Walking Dead.
Nice. I think you made the better choice, quite honestly.
I actually have not heard much of the press around it. You both watched the Oscars, I assume, then.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think, Brendan? I DVR'd it, and I essentially probably watched 45 minutes of it when it came down to it.
I watched it live with commercials because I was live tweeting.
Oh.
And also, David McGuire, former podcast guest, his podcast was doing a live stream during the show.
Oh, wow.
Over on nerdonomy.com. So I was listening to their commentary while I was watching it and contributing to their, they had like a chat room going.
That, it's multitasking, my
friend. It was fun.
It sounds like it. I mean, much more so than actually physically watching the show without all of that.
Yeah.
Without the support system.
What did you think about Seth as a host?
I liked him a lot more than Billy Crystal.
Ah,
but that's just me.
Right, I could see that. Or James Franco for me.
And Hathaway, though? You're okay with Anne Hathaway?
Wow. Well, yeah, that is the thing, huh? Because it was that sort of, like, polar opposite. It was a really schizophrenic.
Trying too hard and not trying hard enough.
Exactly, exactly. So do I fall asleep, or do I just, like, run around the house? I couldn't really decide. And yesterday was this... Yesterday was really... I mean, no, not yesterday. Sorry, 2 days ago. It was just a really odd affair. There were just really some awkward transitions, and I don't know about some of the
jokes were pretty poor taste.
Yeah, they just like fell with a thud. Like,
oh, it kind of sounds like this podcast.
Oh,
ouch. So yeah, if you want to fill out an application for co-host, Kevin, I can get one printed up for you. I will not have my co-host bad-mouthing our own podcast.
Or Filipino-American Cam, exactly. But yeah, like pairing people like Channing Tatum and Charlize Theron for a dance number is really just weird. Harry Potter and Joseph Gordon-Levitt dancing together and
yeah,
what's going on?
I'm pretty sure my wife has already downloaded that clip at least once. So I have heard of some things about what's going on.
The Channing Tatum clip?
No, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Daniel Radcliffe dance sequence. Let's just say there's a fan.
Right. I actually did pretty well in my Oscar pool. I got 19 correct picks out of 24.
Nice. Wow. Nice.
So that was a personal best for me.
Were there any upsets for you, particularly?
Freaking Ang Lee for Life of Pi.
Oh boy, poor. Oh,
so that actually opens up another can of worms, as it is, right?
Beautiful segue, Brandon.
So the thing that I heard most about yesterday and today was the visual effects house that that did the work for Life of Pi apparently went out of business. And purportedly because of all of the work that they took on for Life of Pi. And, you know, all of those people hopefully have found jobs again. It was kind of held up as a testament to, you know, visual effects is really, like, not appreciated enough in the business. There was apparently, like, when it won for Best Visual Effects, they supposedly cut off the speech. Of the guy who was talking, because he was going to bring up that, yeah, my company went out of business making this movie, essentially. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm guessing you have pretty strong feelings about it being a visual effects kind of artist for different things. What do you think about it, Kevin? Just in a nutshell.
I am. So, you know, currently I do what you're seeing probably across Facebook right now too, if you have, you know, artsy farsy friends, is this like fluorescent green blinding badge, you know? It's kind of funny. It's almost becoming like this weird Rubik's Cube. So when I look at my little, you know, friends list, it's starting to fill up with green. I'm like, uh-oh, I'm going to go blind soon. So that actually is it's supposed to symbolize the green screen itself for compositing. And yeah, in general, I totally understand why people are incensed about it. I mean, I do have friends in the industry who, you know, who've toiled, and some have had to move overseas, or, you know, they work ungodly hours to make that magic happen on screen for people, to make your blockbusters come true, you know? And it's a highly underappreciated. The profit margins are very low. There's so much labor abroad as well, right? There's of course outsourcing even in that industry.
What continent do you think would handle that outsourcing?
What? I'm sorry?
Which continent handles that outsourcing?
Oh, I think it's, I mean, for example, I think ILM has a branch in Singapore. I think it really can be anywhere at this point. It could be India, it could be Russia, it could be, you know, and in some ways, I think there are very smart ways to make films globally. But We're talking about a machine here. I think we're talking about greed, and I think that's why you had almost 500 artists out on the block during the Oscar ceremony. And as far as I know, I don't think it's gotten that much real deal coverage. I mean, of course, among you know, and I think why you alluded to Ang Lee earlier, because he got him and is it Carlos Miranda, the cinematographer, were mm-hmm. under fire because they really failed to mention, like, yes, of course, we thank everybody who worked on it, but by the way, there are these people outside right now who are yeah.
Well, the major complaint that I read was that mm-hmm. For that film, and I haven't seen Life of Pi, so much of the film was visual effects. I mean, almost every shot,
yes,
every second of film has some visual effect in it, and to not mention that,
it's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie,
right? And yeah. You know, and so much of that is part of the cinematography element of it, right? So it
exactly.
won for cinematography. Maybe the cinematography elements have to be more kind of praised. And I think, you know, what you said about how, you know, the visual effects make the movies happen. It's like, if you look at just movies that are coming out, just even just across them, not even at the top most grossing ones or the ones that are, you know, are at the Oscars, just across the board, there's almost to every single one, there is some amount of visual effects that happens, whether it's, you know, in service of, you know, stunt work or doing some kind of effect in camera, all the way out to, like, the, you know, titles or the cleanup of editing and things like that. I mean, as that moves kind of away from film, as it appears to be doing, and into kind of a purely digital medium, you know, visual artists, whether they're doing actual, like, you know, character art or not, are going to be involved in some amount of that process.
Exactly. It's a sad thing to watch. It really is, because, I mean, this happened a couple years ago, if you remember, with the writer's strike. And I don't really know
Well, the thing is, with writers, is there are writers' unions. I don't think there's a visual effects artists' union.
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear on the whole picture on that either. I just feel as if there isn't as much of a united front, and it's only now that that's really starting to become more of an issue, because mm-hmm. the amount of layoffs that are happening throughout the industry, you know, just because one film ends, or, as I said earlier, the margins are low, I mean, it just cannot be a good trend overall. I mean, DreamWorks, for instance, Digital Domain, you know, The Orphanage here in the Bay Area, that closed down. It's sad. It's sad to see people. Because these are not technicians. These are artists that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And, so,
if you think about writers and directors, like, there's the Screen Actors Guild. They've been working in film for over 100 years, let's say.
Right.
So they've had that time to organize and really forge these powerful unions.
Right.
Whereas the effects has not been around as long.
That's
in this digital
true.
Format.
Right. And so
things are changing year by year. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I hope that it's just a matter of time before that piece of it kind of grows up and can fend for itself a little bit, because I think you're right. It's just that the margins are so low because it is such a quickly competitive business. I mean, I'm not saying that it's easy necessarily to start a visual effects house. But it's easy to produce a kind of sharp-looking demo reel, I think.
Yeah.
And so it can be easy to appear to be competent, whereas the actual kind of skill and everything, I mean, the industry is just too new, or that sector of the industry is just too new.
So. Right. And I think part of the secret, too, is perhaps... And it's already happening on some smaller scale, where there are effects companies that are actually becoming their own production houses. So they don't get treated just like vendors, you know.
Yeah.
You're not getting treated like a pair of hands. You are getting treated. You have your directors. You have your cinematographers in house, and you can make your own little small features for, you know, whatever, like probably a hundredth of the budget of some huge blockbuster, a la Transformers or, you know. Oh boy. Oh, I said a bad word. That was an unsafe word.
Quick, we got to think of a movie that's good.
I hear that that Argo movie was pretty good.
Oh,
yes.
So I believe Argo did win Best Picture. Is that right?
Best Picture.
So I so want to comment on this movie, but I haven't seen it, and I don't know. Did you both see the movie?
Wait, I did. Yes,
I did as well.
Okay, so so I could maybe just throw this grenade in on this on this, and then run back around on the other side of the wall, or maybe I'll take my Kevin, you can co-host for this section of the podcast. But the short form is, I read an article yesterday. A friend of mine tweeted it, and I picked it up. That was that Argo, and this is a very interesting opinion, and I'll link it. But the opinion in the article was that Argo was a movie about how it reinforces a couple things. It reinforces A, that audiences can't bear to be without a happy ending,
right?
And that Hollywood has the power to do anything. And I thought both of those, I mean, it supports those in the article, but that was the short form. And I mean, so the backdrop of Argo is the Iran hostage crisis, right? And mm-hmm. I guess it's meant to be kind of a story in that, you know, of getting some hostages out by way of a like manufactured film that's there. Am I doing enough of a
yeah?
No, that's a good intro.
Oh, good. So what the article says is that A, it's not a true story, so it's a fake film. So it's not a real thing that happened in a real thing that happened. So it's just using that backdrop as a vehicle. So it's that they could have made it about whatever they wanted, and they chose to make it about, you know, this happy ending. The other piece of it that they, you know, that Hollywood can do anything is there's this undercurrent of, because it's a fake film, there's not a real like author or real director kind of behind it. And so the characters are just kind of what was the word that they used? Kind of archetypal, you know, let's have this kind of guy and that kind of guy, but not because they're not based on real people. They resonate in the way that they echo other things in film or other fiction, essentially, but not real life, which it comes across as the film is overrated, A, at best, and B, potentially belittling to the actual like crisis involved or sense of history, which I don't know. Go.
Okay, my first point would be, my understanding was that although elements of the story were changed, that was an event that did happen.
Okay.
Right.
And they, like, in the movie, they show the side-by-side shots of the characters in the movie and the actual people they are based on.
Okay.
On a real event that happened.
Right.
So there's been some controversy over the emphasis of who gets more credit, but as far as it being just, like, a fictional story that they made up to put on this backdrop, I think that's wholly inaccurate.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could nitpick little things, and this probably applies to Zero Dark Thirty as well, as to the veracity of just how much of it is really the true story, you know? There are certain things that are probably ratcheted up. I mean, I can't say anything without going to spoilers, but there are certain things, I think certain events within Argo, for instance, that are ratcheted up in order for it to become more captivating for an audience.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, it won Best Adapted Screenplay.
Right.
And it was based on, was it a Vanity Fair article?
I think that's right.
So it's a movie based, adapted from a magazine article.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to need to change some stuff.
Right, exactly.
There's not a whole lot of meat there to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this. I mean, I think Ben Affleck is, whatever you feel about him, I think he is...
Not a thing. Oh, sorry, that's just me.
Oh!
That might just
disagree. Disagree.
That might just be me.
Dissension
again,
I'm gonna
pull that grenade back and step back again.
So, I do think, you know, Ben has a few films under his belt now. I think he is a relatively capable director. It's not so much the direction I had so much of an issue with. It was my lack of connection with the central characters, especially in the case of the hostages. And maybe they are composites of their real life characters. Maybe in fact they are like, oh, sort of whiny and bitchy all the time. But
yeah, they are that in the movie.
They are that in the film, and it made it very hard for me to care about. There is this massive, I mean, Iran went through this massive upheaval at the time. Suffering, fear, you know, is in the streets. And I didn't really feel as if these characters were truly appreciating that those stakes and this man who had come to basically save them under the most almost surreal, ridiculous circumstances. So on paper, I feel like the story really works. You know, maybe that Vanity Fair article was especially awesome. But for me personally, as a film, it just didn't pull me in the way it should have.
Well, for me, the one thing that I really give it credit for that I don't give to something like Zero Dark Thirty,
mm-hmm.
was there was a tension in that film, that I felt while I was watching it. It had a thrill to it,
right?
Even though I knew how it was going to turn out.
Okay, so it was
based on a true story.
Yes.
So when I was watching Zero Dark Thirty, I did not feel that thrill.
That's really interesting, because one of my other friends said that the exact opposite. She said that she really admired how Bigelow actually was able to maintain a certain amount of tension throughout the whole film. But you feel otherwise. I haven't seen Zero Dark Thirty yet.
Well, the film, I mean, it's not spoiling too much because I'm just going to talk about the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Right.
Starts out with a CIA torture scene.
Yes.
So right off the bat, I was instantly turned off to all the characters.
Yeah.
These are the people I'm supposed
that
to be
too,
rooting this, for. That, I know.
Yeah. Just that the tone setting is hard to get over for the opening of that movie.
Yeah.
So... but like Django, which I think we all saw. I mean, you know how that's going to end, and still feel swept in it, but it's a different kind of swept. I mean, I don't think there was ever really a point for me of feeling like tense. It's just like, okay,
how are they going to get to a Mexican standoff?
Right.
Exactly.
But that's almost more of a cartoon than it is, you know.
That's true. Right.
A gritty, real movie.
And you know the trademarks. You know sort of what to expect from Tarantino.
Right.
Awesomeness.
Awesomeness. So I don't know. I mean, can we say that for someone like Affleck? Like, I don't know. I mean, Bigelow definitely has a certain sort of trademark and stamp. And that's the thing about awards ceremonies like this. It's really difficult. I mean, Oscars aside, I mean, how do you really talk about the merits of a film on what level, because it's all very contextual when it comes down to it.
Well, I would say that I was glad that Lincoln did not win.
Oh, really?
Because I actually saw Lincoln the day of the awards.
Uh-huh.
So I squeezed that and Beast of the Southern Wild in Under the Wire. So
I
saw 7 of the 9.
Wow, that is quite a double feature. Those two movies are like polar opposites from what I can see.
And Lincoln I think was, because it was adapted from a book.
Mm-hmm.
Is it yet another historical movie that's been, you know, tweaked with for tension or whatever?
Right.
But I have never been so bored. I felt like I was watching a book.
So you're the second person who said that to me. And then I have another... Okay, it's the same friend who loves Zero Dark Thirty. She would absolutely love Lincoln. Actually, no, I can speak as close to this, my mom. My mom felt like... My mom loved it so much that she said, it felt like I got to meet the president. I'm like, seriously? That is some... That's some Back to the Future shit right there.
I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis was good.
He was good, but you did, was it just because it was so chamber, sort of chamber drama play-like? Well,
all the actors did good jobs.
Right.
But as a as a script, it was garbage.
Oh,
like,
wow.
There was no, like, you know how most people, they've got an act structure, they've got a flow to it.
Yeah.
It felt like I was just watching chapters in a book.
So scene to scene, the scenes were acted well, but like the overall arc, there's just not.
Yeah, there's no push in the movie. Because again, you know how it's going to end. Where's the tension? I mean, if he was really daring, Spielberg would have gone and they wouldn't have passed the amendment.
He pulled a Tarantino, yeah.
Yeah.
Pulled in Inglourious Bastards.
Totally. Yeah. Something will explode.
If you had told me that, last year when I heard that Steven Spielberg is making a Lincoln movie, and Timur Bekmambetov, or whatever his name is, was making Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, I would have guaranteed you that I was going to like the Spielberg movie more.
Oh, no.
I was so wrong.
So what you're saying is I should go out to watch vampires. I haven't seen either of these films.
Oh, so Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter might be my favorite president hunting vampires movie I've ever seen.
Wait, what does that mean?
I don't know what that means.
It was ridiculous good.
I heard it takes itself quite seriously too.
It does.
That's what makes it so good.
It except there are a couple of things which don't make a lick of sense, but
title
for one, but for the majority of it, it's like the attention to detail for costumes and events were surprisingly high.
Wow.
I wouldn't rank it in my top movies of the year.
Sure.
But between that and Spielberg's Lincoln, I put it ahead as a movie, as entertainment.
As
information.
Because that, again, that is context. We are talking about entertainment. Because you as you said earlier, I mean, you said Daniel was still very good in the role, and as from what I've heard, he's really consummate in it. But
yeah, he's a method actor, so apparently outside of shooting, he would ask to be called Mr. President.
Or... Oh my God, can you imagine being around that all day? His poor wife.
Well, he did give a really good acceptance speech.
That's true. He gave a shout out to his wife. It's like she's had to live with some very strange men over the year.
Yeah.
Like, how did she live with Daniel Plainview?
I don't know. She there were no milkshakes in that house, I guarantee.
Like,
I swear, if you say that one more time.
I know.
They didn't go bowling and they didn't drink milkshakes for a long time.
Holy crap. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were the Oscars.
Yeah. And... I mean, I like the Oscars for generating a list of things that I might see, but I don't look at it as generating a list of must-sees. From the winners necessarily. I'll look at the nominees and be like, okay, these are probably interesting. And but I don't know. I've always had some kind of play around, like the actual winners are like some kind of hand wringing around it. And then I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of over a lot of the spectacle that they build into the Oscars themselves. I do like to watch the kind of The stuff at the top of the show when they do the, you know,
the red carpet.
But the no.
Sorry, I'm going to show ribbons on you.
The fashion police? Yes.
Yeah.
No. I meant
that show was hilarious. You shut your mouth. Yeah. Joan Rivers is a national treasure.
Melissa. Oh.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I think, I don't know. I had one other topic, but we don't have to go for it. Well, we can just, I think that was a pretty good kind of rundown of stuff. I mean, was there anything else you wanted to get out under the wire, Kevin, before we
have a platform now? Any statements you'd like to make, or any questions you'd like to ask in general?
Well,
or if you could name one thing you think should be a thing and one thing you think should not be a thing.
Oh. Is this something that you do? Okay. Whoa, I have to
it
think
is
about
now.
This. I wish I was. Well, I know a term that I'm really not a fan of recently is the term hate watching. That should not be a thing.
Hate watching? So like,
have you heard this term?
No.
So I think I read about an EW at some point. Maybe the problem is me reading EW to begin with.
Where else are you going to get your entertainment news?
I know. It's in the title. And yeah, hate watching is this term, I guess, in reference to people who watch shows that they actually just cannot stomach, but they just continue to watch it as if it's basically, I think it's like watching a car crash.
You know, like Fox News?
Exactly.
Well, so there's... Shows that you actively dislike, or shows that you watch in spite of what you dislike? Because I consider,
right,
like, Hawaii 5-0...
Oh, yeah. That is a separate show we could do... unto itself, Alan. But Hawaii Five-0 is a good example.
You sure you want to talk about him co-hosting? I mean, Hawaii 5-0 is a big part of this man's life.
Oh my god.
It's a big part of your life, Alan. That's not really a trade-off. Zero-sum game.
So Hawaii 5-0, I don't hate the show. I just know that there's, like, faults in it. I think hate watching for me would be like, I would consider it more like you're watching out of obligation because, you know, you started the season and you have to finish it, which is how I felt watching Heroes towards the end.
Yes. Oh god, I was screaming at the television. I never screamed so loudly. No, it's exactly right. Heroes is a great example because Heroes was a show that started out great, had a great first season, and I think people liked it, and then it just steadily, it's a jump the shark moment. As soon as something jumps the shark, that's when you start the hate watching.
Or if you have a show called How I Met Your Mother and it goes on for 9 years. I can't stop watching.
Yeah, it keeps going.
But okay, exactly. Hate watching, the term. Not a thing.
Because I actually hate the term hate watching, so that makes...
But you enjoy the activity.
But the activity's fine.
Maybe. Exactly. So I have very paradoxical feelings about it. I really do. As for what should be a thing, that's really difficult.
My safe bet is world peace.
No, not a thing.
Not a thing that... Can my coming back on their show be a thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, we could work that out.
All right.
Don't feel threatened, Alan. Yes. It's okay.
Brennan just sent me an NDA form.
I don't think you can hear us right now, Kevin. He should feel threatened. Wait, did I not click the right button to mute Alan on that?
Oh, no. Sorry, my friend.
Oh, no. Edward.
Wow, this is going to be a fun show notes to read later, let me tell you.
Yes.
Spoiler, Brendan stabs Alan in the back.
Well, Kevin, in spite of you potentially replacing me on this podcast, If the you know, is there a website or you mentioned there was a Facebook page? Is where can we get a hold of you? What should I write into the show notes?
I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm most active on that Facebook page now because I'm updating it a lot with a lot of stuff with process things, whether or not it's about storyboarding or animation or what I talked about earlier in terms of the concept of the book. And you can find that, and you know, it's kind of long, so you can always paste that into the show notes or somewhere. It's facebook.com/CradleTheSunAndMoon. And that is the title. And I also have a website at binkoland.com. And that's spelled BINGKOland.com.
Keen. Good stuff, man. I'm really glad we got you on the podcast. It had been a couple of weeks coming.
I know.
Like sicknesses and
a sickness.
Holidays and all sorts of madness.
I know. I'm really glad I could finally be on.
Uh oh.
Hello.
Okay, good. Still there.
having some last second technical difficulties. I think we'll take this opportunity to sign off, Brendan.
Thank you for coming aboard.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Get a room, you guys. Come on.
I'm thinking of starting another podcast.
The spinoff.
It's called the Alan Is Not a Thing podcast.
Oh, shit. Wow. Oh, even I felt that, Alan. That really hurt. Oh.
Oh. All right, guys. I'll see you guys next week, baby.
On the flip side.